it on and leave it on.
Welcome to Bug Radio, boys and girls. After 18 months of unrelenting horror and incarceration, a bit of normality feels like heaven. And what better way to toast the new era than a jar or two by the river on a summer's evening to take it all in?
I'll never forget.
Apologies in advance for aeroplanes and dogs playing football, but in this day and age, we thought we were better off outside than in. Hope you enjoy it.
I remember well as the
The bug finally
has rolled through, and we're reconvening in not a post-bug environment, but a post-lockdown, post-crisis environment.
So you, first of all, you think that the chances of a third go-round are quite low?
I'd say that they're having a rough time in a lot of the world still, and our boffins have only shown sporadic aptitude. But take a look around, we're by the Angel and it's standing room only. The punters have flocked in.
Very quiet punters. There's a few things going around which suggest that these vaccines are effective against the Indian remix. That's curtains for the bug, surely.
Well, that's word around the campfire.
That's checkmate. No?
Well, we're giving the bug every chance with our short-sighted global distribution in the sense of not having...
What, so you think it might be able to mutate further?
Well, we're giving it every chance.
At gunpoint, would you say, fucking aeroplane, what's the chances for you of lockdown 4?
Obviously, in, say, July 2016, that would have seemed an outlandish question. But now, lockdowns have become our reality.
That's our answer to everything.
Our normal life. And we've had three, so, yeah, what's to suggest it can't come back? I'm already seeing caution to the wind. If you've been on the underground lately, a lot of people are riding breezy, no masks.
I had my jab. You had your jab?
Next week.
Yeah, so I had my jab on Sunday. They give you an egg timer. This is for people who are younger than me, which is basically everyone. And apparently, if you're going to have a big fuck-off reaction, it happens within the first 15 minutes.
So that must be pranging. Yeah. You must be tempted to freak out to shit them up.
But apparently, if it's going to properly go down, then that will happen in the first 15 minutes. And that was fine. And then, basically, the night afterwards, you will just get this unbelievable kind of dull pain in the arm that you got it in. So it's like you can't sleep on that arm. You might have to take some paracetamol or whatever.
And that's the bug juice flowing through you.
Yeah, well, that's the Windows 95 installing.
But have you got the AZ or the Pfizer?
No, I've got the Pfizer.
Man. Oh, yeah, that's the sort of...
I've got the Rolls-Royce.
The Waitrose.
Yeah.
Feel bad for the Zeneca dudes. No shade.
Yeah, I mean, that was bad PR. Even though, I mean, actually, maybe their thing is going to do more good, isn't it?
Yeah, Europe has fucked the dog, really, I mean, by seeding distrust of this solution.
Anyhow.
Cummings. Coming through.
Yeah, so what do you reckon?
He showed up to the Bashman and told some home truths, if you believe him.
Which anybody who'd had one eye open for the last 15 months knows already.
I mean, his central claims were that the response was shambolic, callous, through bad planning and resistance to decisive action. We ended up with a lot of unnecessary deaths.
So who'd have thunk it, eh? Fuck me with a feather duster.
And he doesn't like Matt Hancock.
Yeah.
Matt Wanksock to his friends.
Basically, most of what he said is corroborated by more or less everything that we know and was covered in detail on multiple episodes of Bug Radio. So it's not as if any of this was a surprise. But what was a bit weird that he just went out to bat for two or three key blokes.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't follow it apart from snippets, but apparently he was really unloading a lot of state secrets. Like, apparently one bit was, at some point, the Foreign Office vetoed any sort of plans for bombing Iran. Like, Hancock's a prick, and we can't bomb Iran. The villain du jour. Well, along with China, and you might have noticed that the lab leak theory has gone from the fringes to the mainstream.
The lab leak was never completely in the fringes.
People were dismissing it as a sort of QAnon fantasy. Everyone was all in on the pangolin.
Well, I mean, I remember defending the pangolin, and I stand by everything I said about the pangolin. But basically, even though the vast majority of what he said was old news to listeners to this programme...
Bugcast.
It was still amazing to hear. The first thing that really got me was that A lot of people were really angry that Boris had just fucked off those Cobra meetings because he was like, he was writing his book or whatever. And people were really angry he wasn't there. And Cummings just sat in that room and he just went, no, you don't understand. It's good that he wasn't there, because if he was there, he would have just sat there and just gone, this is fine, this is just like a swine flu, and I want Chris Whitty to, like, inject me with coronavirus live on television. It was an extraordinary statement.
I mean, he was saying that the Prime Minister's eye was off the ball due to his personal problems, due to a costly divorce and fiscal impropriety, which led to those previous dramas about why was this mysterious lord funding his wallpaper and things like that. But, yeah, I mean, maybe a half-assed Johnson is better than a full-assed Johnson.
What does that say about the public? That the public, I mean, not just here, but in America as well, have a tendency to elect people whose presence in these rooms is actively dangerous.
It was said during Trump's presidency that some people would give him a hard time for watching Fox News 14 hours a day.
Right.
When obviously that was better than him being involved in, like, important decisions.
Watching the Guerrilla Channel.
Right. So it was a good thing that he wasn't taking more of an interest, because his influence would likely have been maligned.
But the thing is, I mean, where does that leave us now? Because not only is he still there, and as far as I can see, I mean, it's very unlikely this is going to seriously hurt his polling, because about 50% of the British public operates effectively like a sort of cargo cult for Boris Johnson. There's this thing called tribal epistemology, where your whole understanding of reality is just based on which team you support.
Let's say that what Cummings says is accurate and there were tens of thousands of needless deaths. Mm. You know that the next time the polls come out, it's like Tories plus 8.
Yeah. So what's going on there?
I mean, is there anything that could dent their popularity at this point?
Well,
I mean,
think about it. Hang on. Just on a technical level, if you look at Boris Johnson's personal polling, Dominic Cummings' personal polling, which obviously didn't help with his eye test, if it comes down to a straight he said, then Boris is going to win that. The only thing I was thinking is that he implicated a whole load more civil servants, didn't he? They were the ones who basically said, we're fucked. If those people wanted to band together and try to shit-can him, is that not also slightly risky? Because as far as I know, a public inquiry is a legal entity, in the sense that if you lie to a public inquiry, are you not kind of technically perjuring yourself in the same way as you would if you lied in court?
And there might, in theory, be some consequences for that.
They would have to pretend a whole lot of shit that was true wasn't true, and that's risky on their part.
No one has really challenged the veracity, and no one challenged when he said, Johnson said, let the bodies pile high. So far, Hancock has responded with a pissy statement saying he wasn't following it, he was saving lives.
Yeah, in the same way as Jeff Bezos is delivering parcels.
I mean, I'm glad they're doing that now. Yeah. So nobody's really challenging it, so let's assume it's correct.
But you would have thought they would have had a plan, because this has been in the post for, what, 2 weeks?
Yeah.
He obviously, you know, there's no love lost. He's going to turn up and
he's going to grab the mic and explode.
So what are we going to do? What's their plan? I mean, they must have a plan.
I mean, yeah, that's his whole point, really, isn't it? That the operation is not competent. He's a really great footballer.
Yeah. Sorry for listeners, in case you haven't figured out what's going on, there's a small French bulldog. Is it a French bulldog?
Yeah.
He's got a gym ball.
It's
and
twice
he's playing
the size.
He's playing football you've never seen. It's sticking to him like Velcro.
Oh, okay.
So yeah.
So my idea is that what he's saying is probably correct, because no one's managed to contradict any of the substance.
Yeah.
But this brings to the bigger question, that they know that even something as egregious as criminal negligence resulting in mass deaths is not going to harm their popularity. So how do we get to this point where we're effectively living in a one-party dictatorship, where the ruling party can be the most corrupt, incompetent and malevolent regime imaginable, and yet it is rewarded by the victims?
All these things which were horrific to people like you and me for the last year, suddenly the lobby has decided that this matters. Like, what the fuck? So now are you saying we're not mental for thinking that this is crazy?
It reflects badly on the press that this wasn't a scandal at the time.
Just to give them a little bit of, do you think that maybe they would have thought, you know, this is not the time for trying to beat up the government? Now that the national disaster is over, they've gotten away with it. And they've learned they can get away with it.
This was Labour's line as well, but it's not so much politics for politics' sake as holding to account that if you have the people in power during a crisis, you want to know they're doing it properly.
And if they aren't doing it properly, that's a problem for the future. So what do we do about that?
Well, it's a problem at the time. And we should have been made more robustly aware. I mean, people are giving Kernsberg a hard time, and Peston, who obviously they've just been spoon-fed, probably mainly by Cummings, who shouldn't escape blame. This is a little bit like, you know, friend of a friend, the whistleblower with Cambridge Analytica, who got a lot of favourable publicity when she quit the company and exposed all their malign practices that she was absolutely pivotal to, that she was absolutely fundamental to, that may not have happened without her. So, I mean, some scepticism is due of Cummings, similar reasons. I mean, is he not culpable as well? I mean, given that he was the main advisor, the boss man, who was in a position to oust the Home Secretary Sajid Javid at some point. So he was clearly very powerful.
I think it was interesting that Cummings used that tanks on the street story to defend his relationship with Laura Koonsberg, given that was getting a lot of stick. But the other thing is, basically his argument was that before December 2019, he was the king, basically. What he said went in that room. After Boris had got that 80-seat majority, his influence began to wane. He started to lose arguments, and other more forceful characters moved in and grabbed the ball and run away with it. That's what he said. I mean, that's not crazy, is it? Is that what we're saying? Obviously, he's not very popular as well. He had that other problem that he's not a team player, as they say. And so that is going to count against him
And he's got like sort of weird mannerisms, whereas Johnson seems like a man of the people. Like, that's the thing that refuses to die. People think
Cummings is not... He's not client facing. When he was client facing, it was a disaster.
People think that Johnson's like a good laugh and like a legend, and you know, you can have a number of tins with him, and it'll be a big vibe. Whereas Cummings comes across as a sort of Nosferatu, spindly freak.
Yeah,
maybe that's the government's plan, that they can try and seem normal and make Cummings seem weird.
Right. So that works for me in the short term. That does work. The only thing is that there's this idea that Cummings' intervention was a kind of prelude for a much more substantial, legally binding public inquiry.
Yeah. We've had a few interesting public inquiries lately. Like, so we had Grenfell, where they appointed someone hugely unpopular with the victims, and it's widely being decried as a whitewash.
Right.
We had an outcome just yesterday to the decades-long Hillsborough process, which resulted in nobody being held accountable.
Yeah.
And just the other day as well, they announced this big review into football after the Super League debacle, which, as a sidebar, apparently Johnson was for until
he realised there was more hay in being against.
Yeah.
I mean, that doesn't surprise me at all.
And so they've appointed for this like fan-led review Lord Finkelstein.
Danny Finkelstein.
Yeah, some media moguls and assorted barons. So public inquiries, if we're hoping for accountability, we're not going
to
get it.
No, but so who gets to choose these? Do we know, I don't know whether this is outside our expertise, who gets to choose who investigates you?
Yeah, a lord or arm's length, semi-independent figure.
So he was going to feed the papers a couple of headlines, but he was going to go, ultimately, there's nothing actionable here.
While we're still going with the fraudulent inquiries, the Sewell report, which found that like racism isn't a big deal, and the other day we had the publication, very quietly, of the Tory Islamophobia report, which had very narrow terms of reference, didn't speak to major stakeholders.
Well, also, it was basically been commissioned by people who have an ideological objection to the idea that structural racism exists.
Well, that was the Sewell report, and with the Islamophobia report, people that don't accept the existence of Islamophobia. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's like, we're not going to get accountability. It's going to make like the NYPD's self-investigations look pure. And
given what Cummings has done, has he planted a load of seeds here where whatever inquiry comes afterwards would just be discredited on arrival? Can they just hire some friendly guy, pay him a load of money, give him a book deal, and just say, look, you know, wipe our noses here?
I think the big picture here is there's no accountability. And I'll give you another example. So right now, TfL and the mayor's people are negotiating a new deal for TfL.
Right.
And this is unusual in the sense that most of the transport networks in big cities get a lot of funding from central government, whereas they don't here.
Yeah, London is unique in that sense, yeah.
And the Tories and the Prime Minister himself have repeatedly told this egregious lie that the mayor bankrupted TfL, when it is obvious undiscovered tribes in the Andes can tell you, the reason why they didn't have revenue is because there was a fucking pandemic and no one was using the fucking...
Yeah.
And so this is the most egregious lie that's been somehow allowed to go unchallenged, really. And again, it's just a reflection of how garbage the lobby hacks are and how this has been a major factor in why there is no accountability. So take what Cummings said to extremes. Say that an independent investigation found that there was a very large number of avoidable deaths. You'd think that would be about the most serious failing a government could have.
Hmm.
And I'd still not be at all confident that it wouldn't blow over in a day or two, that there'd be any consequences for the central protagonists.
No, I mean, the thing is, this idea that there were tens of thousands of unavoidable deaths, that's not new.
But if you could establish that, like, beyond doubt, burning building, who would you save if you could save one of Piers Morgan or Piers Corbyn?
I'm going to have to go with the former.
Which Piers is more egregious?
Piers Corbyn.
You reckon?
He has less of a following. But that's not by his own design. He's completely prepared to sow unimaginable damage, death, whatever, in order to increase his own profile. I mean, you could say the same thing about Piers Morgan, but it doesn't have the same public health implications.
The thing that seems to have torpedoed Piers Morgan is this thing with Meghan Markle. And, like, I want to say that there's nothing interesting about the royal family at all. It's the least interesting subject in the world. But it feels like we've been deluged with royal stories recently. Like, there was this big deal about Martin Bashir and Lady Diana, who gives a shit? I mean, and there was this bit about Prince Philip and they had to take off all the broadcasting. I guess the thing with Bashir was that they want to radically defang the BBC. But it feels like we're just getting deluged with this stuff. And I guess it's probably like some sort of subset of the culture wars that this is their dividing line.
They have a collection of dead cats that they can drop at any minute. Now that the Cummings thing has dropped, they're presumably going to want some sort of distraction. They've parked a few warships in the channel already, so do you think there's more gas left in that tank, or do you think this Cummings intervention has been in the post for a couple of weeks? They must have some sort of plan. Are they just going to ignore it?
Well, what comes next, basically, is mass unemployment, because when all the support for businesses ends, these things will still be desperately...
These bug-influenced consumer habits are going to stick.
That too. So in terms of how things are going to be going forward, it still looks like people are going to be Britain-bound for the foreseeable. They released a very short list of countries that people can visit, including the Falkland Islands. So it's going to be mainly people here. And I think one of the effects of that is we're going to see more and more street politics, especially as the Labour Party's basically folded itself up, applied for insolvency. I mean, you saw how big Black Lives Matter protests were in one of the lulls of the plague. You saw how big the Palestine marches were. So there's all this energy ready for somewhere to go. And while the Tories are pushing their big, like, authoritarian stances, I mean, you saw Priti Patel going to accompany these raids and the heartwarming scenes in Glasgow where people prevented some of their neighbours being deported. I think we're going to see a lot of street politics, a lot of...
What's going to be the focal point, do you think?
Well, I mean, if there's mass unemployment and there's not support for people and...
You still need a unifying narrative, though.
Yeah, well, I guess there won't be a unifying narrative. I guess there'll just be a lot of sort of spontaneous outbreaks of subversive energy, and they won't have a proper outlet through normal politics, so there's going to be a lot of street action, and it's going to be lively. It's going to be lively around here.
Also, we can't go on holiday, so have you got any plans?
Going for a bike ride in August.
Is that it, pretty much? I've got a couple of camping things.
I was heartened to see, this is very rare, a walrus appearing in Ireland initially, and...
Yeah, what's happened with that? Because we were going to go and have a look, weren't
we? The walrus, then it went to Pembrokeshire in Wales, and now it's in Cornwall. And it's been apparently really reviving the local economies, because everyone wants to go and look at the walrus, which I think has been quite badly named Wally. You could have a much better name for a walrus.
You could
call it Chardonnay.
Where are we going to sleep, though? Take me 5 hours to drive us down there.
Well, we don't want to...
You're against tents as well, so that's a deal-breaker.
Yeah, well, we don't want to bother the walrus. Apparently people have been flying drones near it, which is bad form.
Yeah, I mean, that's a capital offence.
But, yeah, that's been a bright spot.
One of the nice things about moving out to Canterbury is that if people turn up with a car full of Lilos, I could sleep seven people easily.
Nice. Could be a big bug radio social in the works. Bug stock.
Yeah, so I'm going to be taking a bit of the wind out of the Airbnb market, which is I'm very proud of.
Decent. So good to be in touch with our loyal listeners once again. Who knows if and when we'll be back, or if we'll be back in the form of a true crime podcast. And shout out our erstwhile partners at Threads and everybody who's made it this far.
That's right. We'll see you soon.
Tomorrow, just you wait and see.